was all alone. My times of trouble and pain. I used to think there was no one else who felt the cold and rain. Then I woke up to humanity. We were standing hand in hand, and I knew we were one again across this great land.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome. Welcome to another edition of The Balancing Point. I'll try to remember these things that people keep trying to help me out with, like introducing myself. To me, this is all about the medicine, and I often forget to say who I am. This is John Neeters. I'm a doctor of acupuncture and oriental medicine, and this morning we're about to set off on an hour of inquiry and questioning about Chinese medicine and medicine in general. Medicine is medicine. When someone walks into a clinic, it's the same body, it is the same presenting group of signs and symptoms, the same physiology, whether you walk in and see an Ayurvedic physician or a naturopath or a medical doctor or a chiropractor or a doctor of osteopathy or a massage therapist or a physical therapist or an acupuncturist. It's the same body. But there's just different terminology and different ways of relating and working with that body-mind. I love the term xin, X-I-N in Chinese, which is really gets translated as heart, but in Chinese medicine, the heart includes what we would call the mind. So it's the heart-mind. And that's so true in so many ways. The heart has been considered the emperor of the organs. All the organs are seen as being labeled with different functions, like the liver is the general. It's one that really, with a healthy liver, we make strong, powerful decisions and move forward. When we have a liver that's damaged or out of balance, then we make strong, not good decisions, right? A lot of anger and frustration, yelling, things like that. So when the liver's in balance, then we can make those difficult decisions in life, just as in warfare. The decisions are not always easy and or simple. So the liver will help us with that. And the heart is what really controls the organs. It's the emperor, not controlling even so much on a moment-to-moment level, but really the overall running of the state of the being. So let's take about an hour. I'd love to do some inquiry with you. We've got a couple announcements, and then we'll take some phone calls. And go ahead and call in right away. The number here is 415-223-8240. And love to take your calls, do some inquiry. I have a question for you today, all of you, so please stay tuned in. Got some, I think, interesting things today to talk about, but also a great question. So I do want to announce once more, because it's so important, it's so much on my mind, as I'm looking at, you know, whenever I take on a new topic, no matter how many times I've, or even an old topic, no matter how many times I may have done it before, I will always, this drives my wife crazy a little bit actually, I will completely rewrite and redo whatever it is that I'm going to speak about. And look at current research on the matter, look a little more deeply into the Chinese medical aspects of the matter. And so, for example, I'm doing a detox talk and lecture in a couple weeks, and it will never have been done before. So even if you've come to my talks before, this one will not be the same thing. And partially that's because of the amount of literature, the amount of science, the number of studies, et cetera, coming out looking into this area of toxicity. And toxicity meaning something that is not good for you, right? It's toxic and can lead to death in most cases. So looking at this area. And so let's go ahead and take a call, and then I'll come back and I have a few more announcements. And this is Dr. Neeters.
Hi, John. It's Kate again. How are you?
Hi, Kate again. How are you doing? How's
doing
Mom
well.
Doing?
It's been a real roller coaster. That's what I wanted to talk to you about. They over-medicated her this weekend in rehab, and it was driving us crazy because my sister flew down there. She was there. She called me 20 times that day. And she said, are you giving her morphine? No. Well, then why is she not awake? Why can't she open her eyes? They were giving her Neurontin. And then my other sister was there another day, and they said, oh, we're not giving her morphine. No, we're going to give her this drug that begins with a D. I can't think of the name of it now.
Dilaudid.
And it was worse than the morphine.
They're not giving her morphine. They're giving her something stronger than morphine.
Yeah, yeah. And we didn't know it. So they've depressed her.
No, we're not giving her morphine.
So she got dehydrated. Yeah. So we did get a blood test because her breathing was depressed, and my sister said, I didn't say anything, but I thought she had a stroke. I mean, it was like she was so non-responsive. So they ordered a chest x-ray because she started worrying about her lungs. Everything is clear. They did a blood work, and we had talked about looking at the MCV, the mean corpuscular volume for the B12, and it's a 94 as of Saturday night when they took the blood. The doctors are saying she's low on protein. But I looked online at, you know, all of the explanations about iron versus B12, and it sounds to me like they're interpreting it backwards, that a 94 means she could be on the edge of B12 deficiency, right?
Yeah, or folate.
Confusing.
It could be B12 or folate. And 94, I don't get too worried, except in an older person. Because one of the things, if someone is B12 and folate deficient, those B vitamins, obviously, there's also a much higher likelihood that they're B3 deficient, which is niacin. Niacin has been shown in numerous studies going back, oh my gosh, I don't remember how long, but a very long time, to be one of the most effective antipsychotic medications, for example. So whenever I see the potential for B12 and folate to be low, I'm concerned about B vitamins across the spectrum. So it's not just the directness of it, it's also kind of this broader view. Yeah, boy. So what are they doing now?
Well, right now, Dad told him last night, don't give her any pain medication, only morphine if she asks for it. And because we're trying to get her going with the physical therapy. We got a cardiologist on the team, and he wants to do an ultrasound of her arteries to check circulation because her wounds aren't gonna heal unless she's got good circulation.
Yeah, absolutely. And
we got a geriatric doctor finally on Tuesday.
Oh, great.
He wasn't available on Monday, but we lost 4 days. We couldn't get a frickin' doctor in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, they looked at her legs, and the legs have gotten skinny. The ankles and the feet are still swollen. And on Sunday, she got these gigantic blisters on the top of her feet. And then on Monday, she developed a blister on one of her heels. So she can't stand now until it heals. Yesterday, in one of the blisters was as big as the palm of my hand. And one of the blisters popped, and so they've just got her legs wrapped in gauze, and they're keeping her legs elevated so that they heal. So I assume the blisters is because of all this extra fluid that she's been retaining, and it came out like that, yeah? I mean,
how is her kidney function? I mean, it sounds there is a protein imbalance.
Okay.
And the danger with the blisters also is that it can throw that balance off a little bit more. So do you remember what her eGFR is?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, it's estimated glomerular filtration rate. There are lots of different numbers for the kidney, different protein numbers, albumin, et cetera. But the kidney test for dummies, which is the one I look at mostly, is the eGFR, which kind of is an interpolation of all of those. And that tells you how well her kidneys are actually functioning. And with the skinny legs and with the puffy feet, often you're going to see a protein imbalance there. She may not. Yeah, anyway, there are a few things. But if the
result I have is this bun, which is related to kidneys. I've got 34 on that one.
Okay. That's not so good. But do you have creatinine?
That's like only 54.
Okay.
That's really low.
Okay. Yeah, so the BUN creatinine ratio is one of the things that they look at. Yeah, so it sounds like there's some difficulty there. But the main thing is I'm glad you finally got the geriatric doctor. 4 days is maddening, but they're finally there. Dr. Mercola ran an article very recently, I don't remember, just a few days ago, looking at these problems. And he was looking more at the heavy drugging of children, but also then looking at the heavy drugging of adults. And in actually some states now have passed laws that in order to use some of these heavier drugs and to really drug adults, you actually have to get permission from the family. So it's very interesting that it's really finally coming to light. Like, you to ask your doctor if she's on morphine, they say, oh, no, no, no. And if she's on Dilaudid, which is a hydromorphone, that's 6 to 8 times stronger than morphine.
Oh,
right?
No wonder
she
was comatose.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in the hospital for my kidney, they gave Dilaudid. I had no idea where I was. I mean, I started out, you know, talking to my son, being kind of goofy. I said, you know, sometimes when people are on drugs, Johnny, you know, in the hospital mm-hmm. like this, they will say things that don't make sense. And so I started teasing him with that, saying things that didn't make sense. And within about 5 minutes, I was not making sense, but not on purpose. Right? It's just, it's so powerful. So powerful. So number one, I'm happy that you got the geriatric guy in there and you're looking at the labs. Check out the EGFR number. They probably have it on there. If it's under 40 or so, then there's, at her age, they like it over 60. But at her age, getting it under 60 is not atypical. But if it gets under 35 or 40, then there's a more significant kidney problem that would need to be looked at, because otherwise her protein numbers will be off.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So protein drinks would be appropriate to get some more nutrition in her.
Possibly. Without seeing her and seeing her labs, I couldn't say definitively, but some easy-to-absorb form of protein, a rice protein or a whey protein perhaps, would seem, just from what I'm hearing from you, to be appropriate things to do to keep those levels up. But also you need to keep her electrolyte levels up, which they will probably manage just fine, because they're I'm assuming she's on a drip.
She got really dehydrated, and we had put her on a drip on Sunday night, and finally, I guess Monday night or Tuesday morning, they took her off of it, and that's stable. And we've given her coconut yogurt, and I suggested the coconut water because it's loaded with the electrolytes also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like you're doing a great job, and unfortunately, you're probably going to have to continue to monitor the situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, having the geriatric doctor in there to take a look at her medications was the most important step, I think.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Okay?
All right, well, thanks. I just wanted to check in because I figured...
Yeah. Keep up the good work with her.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'll probably be going
Bye-bye.
Down soon. Okay, bye.
Okay. Okay, let's go ahead and take another call. Hi, this is Dr. Nieders.
Hi. I loved your detox program the other day.
Thank you.
I wanted to find out, for those of us who unfortunately smoked a long time ago, do you have anything in particular? Well, anyway, I basically smoked and drank a lot of Coca-Cola and all that kind of thing in college before nutrition was in my consciousness. And anything specific for detoxing whatever the remains of stuff like that is?
Yeah, for each of those, there are specific things. With the Coca-Cola, if you were drinking it a lot 40 years ago, you're actually better off than if you were drinking it 10 years ago, in a way, because at least 40 years ago, you were getting it sweetened with cane sugar, which is not quite, I mean, it's bad, but it's not quite as hideous as high fructose corn syrup. But if you were drinking significant amounts of soda at any period, then what we would call detoxing the liver, but in this case, it's very specific, there would be a buildup of fatty tissues in the liver called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is a huge epidemic in this country. It used to be that the only people, or almost the only people, that had fatty livers, meaning their actual fat deposits in the liver, were alcoholics because of the high fructose in those. But now, 25% of adolescents, you know, we're talking 15-year-olds here, 25% of them already have fatty liver disease. So doing a fat flush for the liver, a cleansing for the liver, would be critical for that. There are lots and lots of books out there looking at different ways to cleanse the liver. I mentioned Christopher Hobbs. I think his liver cleanse book is still available. Richard Schwartz has also written some good things. He's kind of a wild and crazy guy, but he has some good stuff out there. Carrie L'Esperance also has some pretty good stuff. Get a good liver detox plan going. You'd want to include herbal treatments with that, which both Schwartz and Hobbs would have. Each of those would have those. Or you could go to a naturopath or an acupuncturist and get set up on a plan. But that's one of the really critical long-term things that should be done, because the liver just is so overloaded. In terms of the smoking, as a teacher, I do a lot of teaching with acupuncturists. I find probably the condition that is most underdiagnosed is what's called lung yin deficiency or lung heat, or and lung heat. And that, unless people come in with a cough or a cold, I find often the lung problems don't get diagnosed. But they are one of the most critical things in our culture. We have a huge number of people that were smokers when they were young. We have a very polluted environment. We're breathing in toxic fumes all the time. Studies showing that if you're around a diesel truck, even for half an hour or even for just a few minutes, the heart attack rate goes up, lung damage occurs. And for that, I would really recommend that you find a good herbalist slash acupuncturist and talk to them about the smoking, because almost 100% of the time, I will find residual lung damage, and that can be reversed. You know, there are things that can be done to heal that lung yin problem. Now, I'm saying people have smoked, but this is actually a very common problem with young children also. Kids that have had difficult births, maybe they swallowed some meconium, got it in the lungs, or a variety of things. You know, the lungs develop at a certain time in gestation, and if there's a premature birth, there will always be weak lungs. And even though they're released from the hospital, there's no apparent lung damage from a biomedical standpoint. It's still very easy to see from a Chinese medical standpoint. And a lot of kids that are diagnosed with ADHD actually have, as part of their problem, a lung yin deficiency with heat. And the lung is really where we meet the world. That's where this exchange of gases occurs with our environment. People that have chemical sensitivities, often we think of the liver, which is almost always compromised, but really where those chemicals are coming into contact with our body is on the surface of the lung tissues. And so if there's a lung yin deficiency, chemical sensitivities tend to be higher. I find in older people that they're kind of edgy. They can't get along with their neighbors. Their neighbors can't do anything right. You know, they come home too early. They come home too late. They don't mow their lawn often enough. They mow their lawn too much.
I worked at a senior center for a while.
You can never be happy, right? Often there's a big lung yin deficiency, lung heat component with that also. So for that, I would recommend getting in to see a good herbalist, talk to them about how long you smoked, and have them do a pulse diagnosis, and then give you an herb formula to start clearing that residual heat and actually healing the lung tissues.
Great.
So those are the two things that I would do, given what that you've mentioned to me. Now, before you do the liver detox, you want to make sure that your bowels are in good shape, that you're having at least two bowel movements a day, and that you have a good fiber intake, because as you start cleansing the liver and those fatty tissues start to break down, that all gets pumped through the gallbladder into the intestines. And you want to make sure it's getting cleared out quickly, otherwise you can reabsorb it, and you certainly don't want
to
do that.
Yeah, I'm going to come to your detox seminar, too.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to talk about all of that stuff. And, you know, it is important, if we're going to do detoxification of the body, as I talked about on the radio, it's important to do it in the right order. Very critical. Otherwise, you can clear out all these toxins and then you just reabsorb them back into your tissues. So.
Well, and what you were saying about the liver on one other program, that if your liver isn't working, then it's, you know, not processing. And so here I am taking all these vitamins, and my liver's supposed to process them, and I wonder if it knows how to do it, you know.
Yeah, that's a very common problem that I see, is people are taking tons of supplements but not getting much value out of them. So, that's a really good question.
So it's great. And I wanted to make one other comment about what the person was talking about in terms of niacin and psychosis. I worked in a mental hospital way back in about 1965, and before any kind of consciousness of nutrition. And I had a couple of schizophrenic patients, especially one in particular, and she would draw sunflowers, paint sunflowers, embroider sunflowers, talk about sunflowers, dream about sunflowers, the whole thing. And I thought she wanted, you know, sunflowers, so I brought them some seeds. And then I later found out that sunflower seeds, being such a high source of vitamin B, which of course is niacin, I mean, and that's what
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it was phenomenal. I mean, everything she talked about was sunflowers.
Huh.
And I just didn't get it, you know, and I feel bad about that to this day.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was amazing. And, I mean, she even embroidered. She embroidered a huge sunflower.
Yeah, if we can just listen to the body, there's more wisdom there than in all the books ever written. Well, thank you. That's a great, great story. That's fabulous.
Okay. Cool. All right, and thank you for your work.
Oh, thank you very much. And I hope to see you on the 15th.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You know, there's a book. Sam Hoffer was one with the name I was trying to think of earlier. And Hoffer published, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of reports and lots of books. And his work is what led, or at least he was one of the co-leaders, of the use of niacin for schizophrenia, but also as a cholesterol treatment. And we now, you know, there's good scientific evidence that for both of those, that it does help in the treatment of schizophrenic, and it definitely lowers cholesterol levels, particularly the most deadly cholesterol components, or one of the most deadly, which is lipoprotein A. In fact, it's one of the few things that really does that. And he put together some very significant evidence looking at treating vitamin B3 deficiency. And I've always was fascinated with the fact that most, particularly male schizophrenics, usually get diagnosed at about the time they leave home, right? In their early 20s, the time when they maybe go off to college or they go off to the military, but they're leaving home. And I've often wondered if their change in dietary habits. I know mine was going from a pretty healthy food intake. You know, we didn't have a lot of money, so we had chard growing all through our yard because it would grow wild, and we grew our own vegetables. We ate meat and not a lot of sweets or anything. And then I went off to college, and my diet was really mostly potato chips, candy bars, and soda. Occasionally, I'd slip in a sandwich or a piece of pizza. But for the first few years there, it was pretty horrible. And I've often wondered if that might be one of the reasons why there's such an increase in diagnoses of schizophrenia and other problems, psychotic problems, at that time in life. And I don't have any evidence for that. It's just a question. But anyway, there's a lot of compelling evidence to support treatments with B vitamins, particularly B3, which brings me to this issue again of overdosage with medications. And there was this off-label prescriptions of antipsychotic drugs. Now, off-label means that there is no scientific evidence. And so when we're looking at this issue of evidence-based medicine, and mine is and yours isn't or whatever, really, if you look at the medical system, the biomedical system, your simplest evidence of how little science-based it is looking at the number of off-label prescriptions. And between 1995 and 2008, that number for antipsychotics went from a little over 4 million to 9 million prescriptions. And in 2008, $6 billion, that's billion with a B, $6 billion was spent. Now just imagine if we put $6 billion into our school systems. We'd have the best school systems in the world again. But $6 billion was spent on off-label antipsychotic drugs. A lot of that was based on very poor, in fact, no science whatsoever. And one of the biggest areas where this was a problem was in this diagnosis of pediatric bipolar disorder. And there were a couple of Harvard psychiatrists who invented that. It didn't exist before. They just invented that diagnosis. And then they got disciplined recently because it was proven that they had massive conflict of interest where they had received millions of dollars that they didn't declare from drug companies. And these are the guys that created and invented pediatric bipolar disorder. And then they made millions of dollars for creating that disorder. So it's a little scary. So, yeah, don't take anything at face value. I'm sorry. So let's go ahead and take another call. Hi, this is Dr. Nieders.
Hi, John.
Hello?
Kent.
Hey, Kent, how you doing?
Okay. Yeah, Kate's situation reminds me of what happened to a former talk show host in the Bay Area just recently. He was in the hospital in dire straits. The doctors had given up, but his wife showed up every morning, spent every night doing internet research so she could take on the doctors with scientific backing, and she slept in her car in the hospital parking lot with the, when they would throw her out after visiting hours until he finally relented and let her have a bed inside. And the result is he did survive, and now he goes swimming every day. It's been 18 months since the doctor said he was as good as dead. And here's the final kicker. The doctors at the hospital came to her afterwards and offered to hire her as a patient advocate.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, I really think patients need professional advocates. I mean, if
you know, there's no doubt about it. There are a few doctors now. I have a couple patients that I see who have cancer, and they've gone to doctors for advocacy because they just didn't trust what they were being told. And so they found a couple of doctors that's all they do. All they do is advocacy work, and they will help you find your way through this morass of the medical system. So, wow, congratulations to her and to him.
Yeah. Anyway, before I ask my main question, do you have a quick recommendation for a B12 supplement for an 84-year-old woman?
Yeah, injections.
Injections?
Yeah. Those used to be routine. You'd go to your doctor and you'd get a B12 shot. At 84, the likelihood is, if there's any B12 deficiency, that it now involves the lack of intrinsic factors. So if you give her any oral B12, even sublingual. Sublingual would be better for an 84-year-old, but
right.
Even then she may not be able to utilize it properly. But for hydrochloric acid levels are lower in her stomach, then she won't be releasing intrinsic factor, which is what grabs the B12 molecule so that it can be utilized. So the easy way to bypass that is injections. And they're like 50 cents. That's what doctors have to pay for those, or at least what I've seen patients get them from Canada for about 50 cents. It's really, really cheap.
So
Jonathan Wright.
Is it an injection that you would administer to herself?
Yeah, or have someone else. Yeah. Again, it used to be absolutely routine. You'd go to the doctor's office, and for fatigue, for neuropathy, for any number of problems. It's an intramuscular injection. It's very easy for a nurse or a family member, if they'll let them do it, to do it. Jonathan Wright, the great doctor who had so much to do with enlightening us about medical practice and so-called alternative medicine, is a big believer in B12. If you go on his site, he'll have a lot of good information and maybe some sources. I don't know if you can order that. He has I think it's Tahoma Clinic in Washington, and there are a lot of things that you can order on their website. I do not know if B12 is one of them, but it would be worth checking out.
Okay, because, I mean, like, it's all kind of, I mean, sublingual, I don't know if anybody's done any kind of, like, nasal, you know, treatment, or just, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, the nasal and the sublingual are much more likely, and I've never seen the research on that. I'm assuming
right.
There must be some somewhere, but I have not seen it. So I assume that it works, but I don't know.
Right.
It's just my assumption.
How often would they have to go in for a B12 injection if it's primarily that way? Because
it depends. If they did a test, they would see how low she is, and they might want her once a month for a while.
Uh-huh.
B12 stays in the system. Most B vitamins, you really need to replace them twice a day if you're under a lot of stress. But B12, that's not the case. It actually will stay in the body for about a month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it has a much longer life in the body.
Okay, so it makes the injections more practical then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
okay.
If you were doing something like folate, doesn't stay in the system that long, and if you were doing folate, and I've never even seen a folate injection, but so I don't even know if it exists. But if you did, you'd have to be in there all the time.
Right. Okay. Well, now the main question.
Okay.
I was reading where some doctor emphasized the importance of touching the patient's body with the correct hand, such as touching.
Say that again.
Touching the patient's body with the correct hand, like if this is a bodywork kind of guy.
Right.
And he said it's important, like, to touch the left side of the body with his right hand so that the polarity of the bodies was complementary.
Well, the polarities of the body are complementary. The polarity of the body is complementary left to right, but even more so from center of the body toward the extremities. There's more of a negative charge the further away you get from the center of the body. So with the old electroacupuncture machines, for example, you'd put the red lead toward the center of the body and the black lead toward the extremities. Now they have a biphasic wave and it goes back and forth, so I don't really think that's important. I mean, I still, out of habit, still hook them up red toward the extremities or distally. So and what we are doing is trying to change that. Also, one of the reasons that acupuncture
why we use different depth of stimulation or different depths of needling, depending on whether we're doing tonification or sedation, et cetera, is, in my opinion, again, in the Chinese literature, they explain it very differently. The negative charge is also more on the surface of the body and more positively charged as you go deeper. And so there are times when you want to create a conduit from that negative to the positive to balance things a little better, and times that you don't, when you want to keep it separated somewhat. And there's good studies on that showing how you're actually creating a conduit from these positively charged to negatively charged areas. So I'm more concerned personally with that. Left to right polarity can be an issue, but I personally don't worry about that too much, just because I don't think it makes a big difference, and it would be so difficult to carry out.
Right, I was wondering if you use one hand or another when probing or inserting the needles, if that made any difference.
I use my opposite hand when I'm taking the pulse. Like, I take the left pulse with my right hand, and I take the right pulse with my left. I don't know if I said that correctly, but I use the opposite hand. So if I'm, whatever I'm doing with my patient, I will use the opposite hand for diagnostics. And I believe that makes a difference. Again, it's always hard to tell, you know, how much I'm making up in my own mind and how much I'm actually feeling. I mean, that's being human.
Right.
But it feels to me as though there is a difference if I take it with the opposite hand. In terms of treatment, it just doesn't seem very practical to me.
Okay.
To do it. And I get good results with my treatments. Like, I don't needle the right side of my patients with my left hand. I needle right-handed most of the time, occasionally left-handed, but almost always right-handed. Now, there might be some benefit. However, when I stimulate the needles, I do generally do the opposite hand. So I do what he's saying probably 95% of the time. But if I'm doing body work, not so much. It's
okay.
Just too difficult to keep it straight and do it. But for diagnostics and for stimulating the needles, I do indeed use, in most cases, the opposite hand.
Okay. I guess the full-on Taoist treatment would be, would be when you place a needle. Are you doing it with your spine, your knees, your feet, your entire body? I don't know if anybody ever pays attention to that.
Oh, sure. My good buddy Bob Gruber, who's a fabulous, fabulous acupuncturist, he's now working in the clinic over here in Oakland, Academy of Chinese Culture, to help me out. And we will have these discussions. We meet a couple nights a week to go over stuff for the school, but then we'll get into these esoteric discussions. And that's the kind of stuff we talk about. It's really complete, and we're both in agreement on most things, that it really is all about intention. It's all about intention. And when you work with these really great acupuncturists, they have the theory down to, every T is crossed, every I is dotted, but when you really, really get it pulled out of them, it's all about intention. When I'm needling a patient and I want the chi to flow in a particular direction, I have lots of techniques. You know, there are different beads and ways to stimulate the needle, the direction that the needle goes into the tissue. But what I find makes all of the difference, if I don't do anything else, if I just literally create the intention to have the chi move in that direction, the patient feels it.
Okay.
And to me, there is nothing that I do. I think a great acupuncturist could put a needle any place in the body and get a great result, right?
Okay.
And so that's why a lot of these acupuncture studies where they're doing sham acupuncture versus so-called real acupuncture, et cetera, but where they're having the acupuncture done by physical therapists, it always works. I mean, just sticking a needle in someone's body always, in every one of these studies, gives a better result than placebo. I mean, there's no doubt about it. However, in the hands of a master, creating intention, it's a completely different ball game. You know, I've spoken before. I remember my first real deep experiential understanding of that was working with the old president, Sui Wei, of the Oakland Acupuncture School. And he was kind of out there, and people had lots of opinions about him, and he was a phenomenal acupuncturist. I remember, I was his teacher's pet because I taught his Tai Chi class, which was like his baby. And so he would use me for demonstrations, which is not always fun. And so he brought me in front of the class. He was teaching a class, and he put a needle in Hagu, large intestine 4, which is a point that's often used for headaches, and it's kind of the command point for the face and stuff. And you get all these kind of, you know, things out of the textbook. Well, he sat there and smiled at me while he was talking to the class and lecturing, and he needled that point. And it was excruciating for a couple minutes, and then it was fascinating, and then I went into an incredibly altered state, and I could feel millimeter by millimeter the chi moving through my brain and opening things up. It was unbelievable. And, you know, I'd had acupuncture before, and it was really helpful, but that's the one that really, when I got the power of his intention, because this is clearly what he was attempting to do, because he would just sit there and he'd kind of nod at me and smile with this just great, great smile, because he could feel that that's what was occurring. Now, most of my patients aren't up to that level of intensity, so I will do somewhat lighter level treatments, but that really opened me up to the real possibility, and that it's all intention, because you can get 100 acupuncturists to needle that point, and one of them might create that level of powerful, powerful movement. And I felt like I was paralyzed. I think I could have moved if I really wanted to, but it was that state where it's like, movement is not an option, right?
Oh, wow.
It was that powerful. And so when I'm needling patients, I really remember that what's important more than anything, you know, of course I'm trying to get proper technique, and I'm really working to get proper location by feeling where the points are, but really it's the intention. And if I do like 4 or 6 points, most of them I'm just going to stimulate on a moderate level. But the most important points, I will often then, I'll take 2 points and really feed into those points. And sometimes the patients will feel what I'm doing and sometimes they won't, but it's very obvious to me as things really start to move. And so,
okay.
Yeah, to me it's all about the intention.
All right. Well thank you, sir.
And thank you. It's fun.
And thanks for the recommendation about the B12.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Take care, Kent.
Hey, you too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Let's see. Our new edition of the Qi Mail newsletter came out, and if you're not signed up, go to thebalancingpoint.net, thebalancingpoint.net, and click on our Qi Mail account. And this month, now this won't appeal to all of you, but this month it's on managing your reproductive health with acupuncture. And probably the area now where there's the most acknowledge science around acupuncture, it's really on reproductive health. Getting acupuncture in conjunction with a biomedical in vitro fertilization or IVF procedure increases the chance of success by 65% or so. And that was reported by the British Medical Journal a few years ago, and that's been backed up by numerous studies. And if you think about it, those IVF procedures are going to run $10,000 to $20,000 or more. I had one patient, I think, paid $23,000 or $24,000 because the eggs were sent back to Yale University to be washed and chromosomal studies, etc. So $10,000 to $23,000, and you can increase the likelihood of getting pregnant for about another $400. So it's really pretty amazing level of bang for your buck. What people don't know so much is how effective it is also for men. I'll have guys come in here, and their doctors are totally blown away because they'll have sperm tests done where they have low motility, the sperm's not moving well, they will have low sperm count, they'll have low volume, and we'll treat them with some acupuncture, but mostly with just some supplements and herbs, and they'll come back in 2 months with completely different lab tests. And their doctors are really, frankly, quite tripped out by it. They don't know what to make of it. So we improve the sperm count, we improve the morphology or the condition of the sperm, and also the motility. How will they move? So for men's health, it's very important. And male infertility is a huge part. At least a third of couples that are experiencing reproductive difficulty, it's really with the male or a combination of problems between the male and the female, more so than just the female. So, you know, acupuncture decreases the likelihood of miscarriage, it improves blood flow to the uterus, it normalizes the hormone systems, it normalizes the pituitary and the endocrine systems. It also dramatically reduces the stress, the anxiety around infertility, which is one of the reasons why women don't get pregnant. And when they start going in looking at these fertility treatments, they create so much stress on the body that the body will not maintain a pregnancy. So it's one of the areas that Chinese medicine really, really shines at. But also PMS, or premenstrual syndrome, which has certainly damaged a few relationships, and how effective Chinese medicine is, both herbs and acupuncture are so significantly effective at this. And then there's our old favorite, menopause, you know, where acupuncture is and herbs are very, very effective. So anyway, let's go ahead and take another call. This is Dr. Nieders. Hello?
Good morning, Dr. Nieders. This is Mahesh here from India. Can you hear me?
Hi there. I'm glad we got you on the air.
Yes, indeed. I believe this might be your first call from India to your new studio. So you know calls are coming from across the globe to your new facility.
I guess so. Yeah, fabulous. So how are you doing?
Very well, Dr. Nieders, all thanks to you. In fact, I'm calling to report a couple of facts and, mm-hmm. as usual, with a couple of questions.
Okay.
The first fact I'd like to report is that, you know, I had called in January regarding my cholesterol numbers, mm-hmm. and this was after I had done a lipid profile. Mm-hmm. And you had looked at my numbers at that time, and you felt that my triglycerides were a little on the higher side and my HDL was on the lower side. Mm-hmm. You also felt that I might benefit from doing a vertical autoprofile, and later I've heard on the show about the PLAC2 test, but I've mm-hmm. realized that both of those are not available in this part of the world yet.
Okay.
So I basically went ahead since the 12th of January 2012 when I called in first, and over the past 2 months I've been doing you know, what seemed like the most common sense things to do from listening to you on the air, which is that I began taking about 5,000 international units of vitamin D a day. And I also finally my krill oil arrived about a month ago, so I began taking this sort of high-quality Neptune krill oil from Source Naturals. So that's been going on for a month. Now, mm-hmm. the only way of knowing whether all this is making a difference in terms of blood work is, I'm afraid, the same old lipid profile. So when I repeated that, I found my biomedical doctor was quite startled because what had happened was, and this time around I've converted some of the numbers to MMOL so mm-hmm. that it's easier for you to interpret. So my triglycerides in January, mid-January 2012, were at 4.69. Mm-hmm. And they had come down to 2.67 by the 11th of March.
Wow. You probably can't hear it, but I'm applauding you.
Thank you so much. And all the applause goes right back at you, Doc. You're the one who's really guiding us on this, however far away you are from us in India, because nobody in India still seems to know much about this. And sadly, the place where the real wisdom lies, the Ayurvedic physicians don't have any objective methods of proving anything that they really do.
Mm-hmm.
The HDL number went up from 1.08 mmol to 1.37. Now, this is again in that period of 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
The VLDL number, which sadly is not calculated directly, but it's an arithmetic that they do finally, that again went down from 0.93 to 0.53.
0.93 to 0.53? Is that what you said?
That's right. 0.93.
Right.
To 0.53.
These are incredible.
About
most medical
yes,
doctors
indeed.
Would tell you that that's almost impossible. to get VLDL.
That's right, which is why I really, I had it done from the same laboratory because I knew that nobody would believe it. And both times I chose a reasonably high quality lab to do both of these tests. And, you know, I was truly amazed myself because I remember once, I think this was a discussion you either had with Dave Stauder of Apple Foods or with one of your regular callers, Kent, where you said when you change the trajectory of a rocket launched into space by a few degrees, every little degree seems to add up. And, you know, if you catch it on the way up rather than on the way down, the incremental benefit that you get or the change that you're able to make is exponential. So I cut down on my simple carbs. I began doing my interval training. I added vitamin D and cinnamon to my diet, and this is basically what it's done for me in 2 months.
Wow. Do you go to my Facebook page, Mahesh?
I don't, doctor. It's the only thing, I'm so sorry, but I stay away from social networking because I find it takes a life.
I don't have a personal one myself, so I don't blame you. I can't even look at my own Facebook page, so I'm right there with you. I'm going to talk to my wife and see, and we'll leave your name off of it, if she'll put this on there, because one of the difficulties is people hear, not just myself, but certainly lots of people talking about these things, but it sounds almost too good to be true. It's like, well, if that would really work, why wouldn't my doctor know about it? And so when there's a real live human being like yourself, and you have no vested interest in this, I mean, you have nothing to gain
Absolutely.
By any of this other than your own personal health, it really can turn people around. They go, oh, really? Well, maybe I will do that.
I would be more than happy to share it all.
Yeah, so I cannot thank you enough. That is phenomenal, phenomenal results. And again, you keep trying to give me the credit, but you're the one that called. And I'm not doing those interval trainings for you, you know.
No, doctor, but if it weren't for your guidance, because we looked for the same thing around us, and sadly, medicine has such a grip over, you know, every part of the world now, India being no exception, where it's seen as being modern and, you know, today, and it's the right thing, and why would you go to Ayurveda for anything except an occasional relaxing massage and so on? It's really
right.
Sad. And when you go to biomedicine for advice, because, you know, at the end of January when I had my annual and they gave me these numbers, my doctor immediately suggested that I should take some form of statin or the other, maybe a Lipitor or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it weren't for your shows and for the information that's available on the net, thanks to people like you and Dave Stauder, one simply wouldn't have access to the sorts of damage that you could do to yourself with statins, and
yeah.
that there were alternatives available, you know, and yeah. harmless alternatives at that. Even before taking these, anybody could consult a biomedical doctor, and all they'll tell you is that it'll probably do you no good, but nobody could really tell you that krill oil is going to poison you.
Right, exactly. And something I don't mention enough on the show is my respect for Ayurveda. Ayurvedic medicine is just a wonderful practice. I don't mention it so much because there's no licensure for Ayurveda in the U.S., right? But I have deep, deep respect for the Ayurvedic medical community and principles. So hopefully in India, you can help steer some people even back in that direction. And
they're still
I can't
trying,
thank you.
Doctor. But you
yeah.
see, the amazing thing is something that I heard on the last episode of Medicine Men that was just uploaded, I think, a few days ago. And it was actually on your call-in show, where Dave Stauder called in with the book called Tarnished Gold, which was about
mm-hmm.
the sort of gold standard for medicine, right? And the sad thing in India is, much like, you know, other parts of the developing world, we are trying to do Ayurvedic studies with the Western medicine model. And oftentimes, you can't even get a study group that's large enough, homogeneous, for them to get the sort of results that would probably be credible in those peer-reviewed journals and so on.
Right. Wow, Mahesh, and we're out of time, but I cannot thank you enough and congratulate you. So, again, thank you, my friend. This is really great news.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nitas. I'll call you again with my question then next week. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All righty, take care.
All the very best. Night.
How fabulous. This is John Neters. Please come join me on the 15th. And until then, I will be back next Monday. Actually, we're going to have a pre-recorded show, I think, Monday. I'm not sure yet. Tune in, and we'll see. And then I'll be back here next Thursday to meet with you. So thank you. Be happy. Bye-bye. We were standing hand in hand, and I knew we were one again across this great land. I stand in the sun under.